Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna add you to my roster. In Roto, replacing Gio Soto, Giolito, and Brito, baby, where'd my fab go? Near the Florida Keys, there's a place in Miami, that's where you wanna be to get ahead of your league. If you put Posey at sea, he'll help in points or OBP. Heath will approve, cause he's under 30, cause Heath's an ageist on the podcast. Mazzara and Parra project to Amiwara, Herrera, Cabrera. Don't let the bait that scare ya, Machado or Bono or no.
Oh, what a busy weekend in fantasy baseball. What's up, everybody? Adam Azer with Heath Cummings and Scott White on Monday. Hope everybody had a great weekend. I certainly did. Heath, Scott, hope it was outstanding for you as well.
You know, I came in today pretty grumpy, and then we've gotten off to a slow start this morning, so I got even grumpier. But then you made my week just seconds before the podcast began. So I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be happy the rest of the day.
How'd he make your week?
He made my week by letting me know that he cheats the sound quality to make his voice sound lower on the podcast.
Yeah.
Which means, basically, for you, those of you listening out there, Adam's real voice can only be heard by dogs.
Well, this is kind of like podcasting PEDs, I guess. I definitely doctor my voice just a little bit to make it sound a little bit deeper so I don't sound like a 12-year-old kid.
Don't people frown on like singers for doctoring their voices? I mean,
yes.
is this kosher completely, Adam?
I think so.
I've always wondered when I've overheard someone else listening to the podcast and I'm like, man, I sure am talking a lot. And then I realize, oh no, that's Adam. We must sound alike. It's just because you're lowering your voice.
Maybe, but I haven't been doing that my whole career. This is a relatively new development, Scott. So I think we just must sound alike, you know. Regardless.
You guys don't really sound that much alike.
I don't think we do either. Sometimes when I listen back, I hear some similarities.
Scott's voice is much more manly.
But not when I doctor it.
Well, yeah.
Then it's, you know, pretty even. We're going to take a look at what happened over the weekend. The most added list, the most drop list. Tell you about SeatGeek in a little bit. There were some call-ups. Blake Snell is going to be up this week. He's going to start on Thursday. There are actually a lot of call-ups this week. Some of them are quite interesting. And email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Now, this feels like one of those shows where we've got like 6 pages of notes. We're going to get to 1.5 of them. So let's get right to it. Most excited ads for you this weekend. Who were they? Scott White.
Probably Matt Moore were in the leagues where I could add him, which were probably the leagues where I dropped him. I was able to add him back after yesterday's 2-hit, 10-strikeout effort, which is hopefully a sign of him bouncing back.
It's kind of a sign of him being Matt Moore.
Like, it may be. It may be. It may be just, we kind of saw that from Adam Conley too, after a couple good starts. Maybe he's coming around and then he gives up 11 hits last time. So, obviously you have to assume there's going to be inconsistency until he shows there's not. But after a start like this, I do think he needs to be owned because I do think the upside for Matt Moore is very high.
Yeah, the guy that I added the most in several different leagues was Brandon Finnegan again. Yes, he is a 2-start pitcher this week. One of those 2 starts is against the Braves, so it's kind of like 2.5 starts. And in 3 of his last 4 starts, he's given up 2 runs or less. Actually had the strikeouts come back a little bit against St. Louis. He hasn't... when you look at his whole season's worth of work, it's kind of strange. You can tell when I owned him because he was really good at the beginning of the year when no one owned him, and then I added him and he was awful, and then I dropped him and he's been pretty good since. So
we know what to expect this week.
Yeah, he's probably going to be just awful, but I think he should be pretty high, especially in points leagues. He should be owned in most regular points leagues.
All right. Well, there was one ad for me that I woke up at like 3 a.m. for whatever reason. And I checked my email and I was like, please, 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 please tell me I got James Paxton. I am back on the Paxton wagon. Yeah. I dropped Matt Whistler for James. No, I don't remember who I dropped. I dropped somebody for James Paxton. Somebody not as good as the Paxman. He is the most added player in our leagues. Paxton is 56% owned, up from 12%. This guy throws 115-mile-per-hour fastballs. Something like that. No, he throws a 92-mile-per-hour cutter. That's one of his off-speed pitches. He throws 98 consistently. I'm excited. I don't know where it's going to go, but I feel like you got to get him for the upside.
Yeah. I agree. He was up there for me, too. And this is the change in velocity. And I mean, there's an explanation behind it. He started throwing the different arm slot, dropped the arm slot, more of a three-quarters delivery. And hey, the velocity was up. Also says he's improved his pitch selection, realizes that he can't lean so heavily on his fastball early in games. So I think there's a few reasons to be excited about Paxton. And like you said, the upside with this velocity seems high enough that you have to pick him up and see where it goes.
Yeah, well, would you have rather had Paxton or Matt Moore?
I gave more priority over Paxton, but I got both in several leagues.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think I'd still take more over Paxton, but it's getting very close. And
now, yeah, what's the difference between Matt Moore and Yordano Ventura, who had an equally as impressive outing this weekend and has been equally as frustrating this year?
That's a good question.
Well, Ventura hadn't had a single good start until this most recent one.
Yeah.
All year long?
Yeah. I mean, even when he had quality starts, the strikeouts were way down. There was no reason to get excited about Yordano Ventura except, okay, the final month and a half last year, he was good. And then this month, I don't know. He seems to be, I guess this is kind of stating the obvious, very emotional player.
I'd say that's a fact.
And I can't help but wonder what kind of influence that might have in this performance. I don't think.
Well, we've known
maybe,
that for
maybe
years
it's just a coincidence. I don't feel like it's a coincidence that he turns in his best start right after getting hit with this big suspension for this emotional confrontation. Maybe had a bit of an emotional release there and was able to calm it down a little.
I think it's funny that he's still appealing, I believe. I don't know if he dropped it after yesterday's start or not, but they asked him about why he was appealing. He said, I don't think I did anything wrong.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. I do. Well, yeah. I don't know if you guys want to share any other ads. I added Brett Gardner because they have, you know, if you read Scott's column with the best and worst hitting matchups, the Yankees have some of the best matchups. So trying to steal a win this week, Brett Gardner in a shallower league as they go to Colorado for a couple games, then face the Twins. I added Hunter Strickland. I think that was probably a mistake because it does not seem like Bruce Bochy is wavering from Santiago Casilla, who got the save last night. But that was an interesting situation over the weekend. A lot of bullpen stuff over the weekend. And I tried to add Eduardo Nunez, but he got claimed ahead of me in a shallow, you know, in our podcast points league. He's played well enough to earn that, I think, at this point. And I tried to add Nunez. It didn't work. As I mentioned, I did drop Matt Whistler. And I'm not giving up on Whistler after two bad starts, but look, he never wins games. So he's got that disadvantage anyway, and there are just some exciting pitchers right now. Hopefully you didn't miss the boat on Matt Shoemaker and Michael Fulmer. Paxton, yeah. Danny Duffy is 67% owned. Just a lot of exciting pitchers, I think, out there. Closers are changing, so probably a busy, busy weekend for many fantasy owners. How about you guys?
Did you regret dropping Danny Duffy in one of our head-to-head leagues where you can use him at RP Heath?
Yeah. I wasn't pleased with that decision, but I don't think Danny Duffy has just turned the corner and turned into this type of pitcher. He's having a really nice run right now.
Okay. I thought I was the last to come around to Duffy because I know Al and Chris have both been pretty excited about him. And I was
I'm excited about, I think he should be owned. And I can't remember who I dropped him for or what the situation was. But I think he's probably a top 50 pitcher.
Yeah.
Which is still much more than we thought Duffy was at the beginning of the year, and he should be owned.
Yeah,
but I don't think Danny Duffy.
I don't know that I'm even ready to go top 50, but that's higher than needs to be owned level. And you know, I'd rank him behind Paxton and Moore, some of the other guys we've talked about. Shoemaker, right? Is Shoemaker still available in even 20% of leagues? It seemed like his
I don't think so.
Ownership was lagging there for a while. This was his best start yet. As much as we've raved about him, this was 11 strikeouts and 8 shutout innings. I mean,
yeah,
he did give up his first walk in 5 starts, so I guess that's the knock on
really him. Just one bad start at the Yankees.
Yeah,
and it wasn't even that bad. It was a couple of home runs in like the 7th inning after 6 shutout innings, if I remember correctly. And I think Shoemaker is owned in less than 75% of leagues, so he's still out there.
That's amazing. That is, yeah. There hasn't been.
Well, his ERA is still 4.76.
Well, yeah.
That's part of the reason.
But during the stretch where he's turned it around, it's like around 180.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe people are just looking at the overall line and not really looking at how things break down. He was back up to 23 swinging strikes in this one. I mean, that's Clayton Kershaw doesn't get those swinging strike numbers as consistently as Shoemaker does, and one walk in his last 5 starts.
He struck out 49 batters without a walk at one point.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So Shoemaker 74% owned. You need to add him if he's available. The guy's just been outstanding 5 starts in a row. The most added list. Okay, so let's go through it here. And we got James Paxton, number 1. Tommy Joseph, number 2. Catcher eligible, first baseman for the Phillies. 68% owned. And Tim Anderson, number 3. We're going to talk about all the call-ups in a little bit. But Tommy Joseph, number 2. Guys, is that justified? 68% owned for Tommy Joseph.
I replaced Cervelli.
You replaced Cervelli? I replaced Wellington Castillo in a league. One catcher format, two, it doesn't matter. Joseph, I think, is must own for the possibility of production at a position where most owners have gotten very
low. So you're moving Joseph ahead of Wellington Castillo?
Yes.
Wow.
When's the last time Wellington Castillo did anything useful? I'm probably moving him ahead of everybody but the top 5 at the position. Posey, Lucroy, Gattis, McCannon, and Salvador Perez. Probably ahead of Stephen Vogt. Pete McCannon clarified over the weekend that, yes, Joseph is their everyday first baseman. And then he went out and hit 2 home runs in a game.
To clarify, the last time Wellington Castillo did something useful was yesterday.
What did he do?
2 for 4 with a double, running an RBI.
It's been pretty sporadic.
Yeah, though. It has.
Yeah.
Well, I'll ask you this. You could see Russell Martin out there in 10-team leagues. He's 73% owned. He looks like he might be coming around a little bit. Would you rather have Tommy Joseph or Russell Martin?
I'll stick with Martin.
I will take Joseph.
All right.
Also, Matt Wieters.
I think I made that pretty clear when I listed my top 6.
Yes,
at the position,
but I wanted to bring up another guy. Maybe we overlooked him a little bit. Martin's definitely hitting better lately.
Yes.
The Blue Jays are on fire right now. We got Danny Duffy at number 4. Carlos Estevez is the number 5. He is the new Rockies closer. So, yeah, he has not had a very good year, but I think he's been better lately. 20% owned, that's, you know, stopgap kind of thing with Jake McGee on the DL. Mm-hmm. Although, do we know the extent of McGee's injury?
It sounded like it could be a pretty lengthy absence, but I can't. Were they calling it knee inflammation?
Yes.
I think it's how they classified it, which is pretty vague. I'm not sure we've heard the full diagnosis yet.
Martin Perez, Chase Anderson. I imagine these are 2-star pitchers.
Right.
Johnny Peralta, 50% owned. I've asked this before. I'll ask it again. Johnny Peralta or Eduardo Nunez, who would you rather own?
I've got Peralta. And I think he's now third base eligible as well. I've got him right around a borderline startable option at both positions.
I'm going to try to trade him to you, Heath. Why don't you accept my trade offers?
Well, the last offer you sent me was like Carlos Santana and a bag of baseballs for Joey Votto.
No, Carlos Santana and Johnny Peralta for Joey Votto.
Okay. I'm not ready to make that deal.
I don't blame you. We'll see if we can work something out. More on the most added list after Johnny Peralta. Will Harris, 49% owned. Under-owned, Will Harris, 49%. Come on.
No, I agree. I think he's the guy. It would help if the Astros were winning more. You know, I've had this debate the last couple weeks. Do I drop Sam Dyson for Will Harris? And I see how many opportunities Dyson is getting versus Harris, and it's just like, no. can't do that.
Yeah.
Dyson had a monster week.
Yes, he's been really good. Jerks and Profar is after Will Harris. Profar is 70% owned. Revisiting that situation now, we don't know what's going on with Beltre, but it does kind of stink that Mitch Moreland and Prince Fielder are doing a little bit better, especially Moreland. What do you think about 70% ownership for Profar?
That seems probably just about right. Maybe even a touch. I don't know. I'm not as optimistic about him getting, and he's played very regularly. Now 0 for his last 10. I wonder if he gets the day off in the next game.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
One more guy. Zach Davies. That is someone I picked up. I forgot about that. I dropped Whistler for Zach Davies. Are we buying this? This is three really impressive starts in a row for Davies.
It is, and it has, I mean, you look at his season numbers, if you're one of those types, 380 ERA, 118 whip. I mean, those are much better than I was expecting to see, which probably tells you that if that's better than I expected, I'm probably not on board yet, especially like you were saying, there's so many exciting pitchers to pick up. It's a relatively low strikeout guy on a rebuilding team. Is yeah. not going to move the needle for me at this stage of the season.
Okay, so he's clearly behind Duffy and Paxton and guys
yes.
like that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, listen, it's almost summertime. Hopefully you've got some free time on your hands to go to games, go to concerts. And when I'm looking to buy or sell tickets, SeatGeek is the only place I go to. Try SeatGeek right now. You can get $20 back after your first purchase. I'll tell you how in just a bit. Now, for example, I've been looking for tickets in the fall for Miami, Florida State football. I will be at that game, and I'm looking for the best value. So I'm going on SeatGeek. I'm looking at value. I'm looking at the view from the seats, and I've set alerts. So SeatGeek's going to tell me when the ticket prices are dropping for that event. That is really an awesome feature. Saves me a lot of time and a lot of scouring all over the internet. Now, you know what else saves me time and scouring? SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available on other sites into one place, and great part about SeatGeek, they don't sneak hidden fees in at the end, unlike StubHub. So you see the full price from start to finish on SeatGeek. Just download the free app right now. Take a look. You're going to see what I'm talking about. It's really an awesome app. And our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So download the free SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab. Click add a promo code. Enter our promo code. It's FANTASY. All caps, FANTASY. SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. That's SeatGeek, the only place I go to buy and sell tickets. You will love it. Give it a shot. Some news for you here. Mike Trout hit by a pitch on the hand. He has a bruised thumb. Oh, I hope he doesn't slump like he did last year when he hurt his wrist. But he should be in the lineup tonight, so it looks like you've dodged a bullet there with Mike Trout. Yu Darvish did not dodge a bullet. He will miss today's scheduled start due to shoulder tightness, and we'll keep an eye on it. What do we do with Manny Machado this week, guys, facing that four-game suspension?
You got to sit him.
Sit him?
Yeah, you got to sit him.
What, do we know when the appeal's going to be heard? Or
I thought, has he not agreed to serve it?
Oh, no. Has he?
Okay, I don't think yeah. so.
Then I would still, I think, I can't imagine it's going to go through the entire week. I'd say you're going to lose Friday, Saturday, Sunday, best case scenario.
Well, I hate to say this since I'm having to ask the latest on it, but I feel like we got some advance notice for Odor that made it pretty clear when to sit him. So I'd hate to sit Machado unnecessarily. I think I'd go with
they have six games.
I don't know. I don't have my schedule in front of me.
Well, all right. Something to keep an eye on. I looked this morning and I couldn't find any information on it.
Okay.
I don't think he has dropped his appeal. So that's a tough one for
fantasy. I mean,
Logan Forsyth is back, and he is 78% owned. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Gerrit Cole left Friday's start with triceps tightness. I mean, if you're setting your lineup right now as of 9:40 in the morning a.m. Eastern, you can't start Cole. We don't know that the latest. Should get more info later today. Francisco Cervelli out 4 to 6 weeks with a broken hand. It's going to be Chris Stewart and Eric Kratz catching. The Cubs. All right, this is kind of interesting. The Cubs might be looking at Yankees relievers. Betances, Miller, Chapman. If Chapman gets moved, then obviously Miller becomes a must-own guy. I don't know what your take is with this, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that may never even come to pass. So this could be moot. But I would guess whoever the Cubs acquired would become the Cubs closer. And so that would be, you know, one of those three dominant relievers would gain value. You know, there'd be two of them suddenly are valuable in fantasy instead of just one. Obviously bad news for Hector Rodon, who's been pretty dominant himself this year, but I mean, let's obviously wait and see it happen first.
Yeah. Felix Hernandez is going to be out at least another 4 weeks due to a calf strain. Brandon McCarthy and Hyunjin Ryu are both on rehab assignments. I was reading Buster Olney on Saturday, I believe, or maybe Sunday, whatever, and he said that the Dodgers like Frankie Montas a lot, a minor league pitcher. And then Julio Urias had a great start last night. He's going to make another start this week and could throw between 90 to 100 pitches. He's only been about 88 pitches, really? I think, each of his last two. So how long do you think Julio Urias stays in the Dodgers rotation?
How does he pitch in this start?
Well, it's two very good ones in a row.
Right. I mean, I think if he keeps pitching well, he stays in the rotation for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised they're going to let him throw 90 to 100. I thought it was established he'd be 80 to 90, kind of like John Gray was with the Rockies last year and was never able to win a game because of it. So even with him pitching well, I was souring on Urias. But if this is true, 90 to 100, I mean, he could go 6+ on that number.
I feel like he's going to get bumped from the rotation.
At some point, yeah, the innings are going to run out. But you're saying even before that?
I don't know. The way the article was written by Olney kind of made me think that this was before last night's start. But it's just McCarthy and Ryu both being on rehab assignments. We could be talking 3 weeks to a month.
Yeah. And Ryu already tried a rehab assignment and it didn't take. So.
Right.
It's probably going to be one of those situations that works itself out, I would say. I wouldn't worry about a rotation squeeze for Urias. I would just be worried about Arias's own performance.
Okay, Shin-Soo Choo could return today. What's the deal with Jose Reyes, guys? What do we know about Reyes and the shortstop situation out in Colorado?
The Rockies, I believe, have 2 days to make a decision on what they're going to do with Jose Reyes. I think by Wednesday they have to either release him or trade him or activate him. We don't know anything besides that. I think there's a lot of teams out there that could use Jose Reyes. But it's a difficult deal to work out when you owe him that much money and everybody knows that you don't want him anymore.
Jose Bautista likely going to DH today. You got to make a decision on Carlos Correa. He's missed 3 straight games with an ankle injury. Adrian Beltre's been out with a hamstring injury. So those two are tricky. And Matt Carpenter is expected to return tomorrow from his sore finger. I lose Sean Manaea's second start. I lose Matt Carpenter for 2 days. And I lose to Scott White by like 13 points.
Oh, I needed that win so bad. Neither of us
well.
Deserved it.
What?
Neither of us deserved
it. No,
win.
No, we were both horrible.
But I needed it. I needed it. I was surprised because you were in first place in your division. You were killing it in that league. And then you lost to me, and I think you're tied for first still, and I'm 4-6. I was surprised to see how close our point total is, though. We're both between 300 and 350 points behind the leader, whoever that is.
Oh, yeah, I got off to a great start, and it's just been downhill, which is why I was going to pick up Eduardo Nunez. I was even thinking about dropping Jason Kipnis. I think I was going to drop Jason Kipnis for Eduardo Nunez because I just want to win 1 week. You know, sometimes I think you can get a little bit caught up in, oh, I can't drop this guy. He's got too much potential. And before you know it, the guy's killing you for so long, and you didn't play the hot hand. And you're screwed. And by the time things correct themselves, you're out of the playoff race.
That's very true. That does happen a lot of times. Also, sometimes you decide to give up on a guy, and then he Brian Dozier's last week.
Yes, but Brian, like Kipnis to me seems so marginal. What I did was I looked at the available second baseman in that league, and I thought if I lose Kipnis, okay, Steve Pierce is out there, Logan Forsyth is out there, Nunez is out there. I could probably make up for it.
I was tempted to drop Joe Panik in a league for the same reason. We're speaking about the head to head format, so no middle infield spot.
Right.
It creates a lot more depth at that position. I did drop Kipnis in a 10 team league, and he has not gotten picked up in like the 2 weeks since I dropped him. So this is 12 team league, so maybe he would get picked up, but there's a chance, I think, that you could sneak him through and make use of that roster spot on somebody more of more immediate value to you.
It's just tough, though. You know, you are at we're halfway through. I mean, look, the regular season, you've reached the halfway point in a lot of leagues, right? Some leagues start around week 20, their playoffs, and so now we're in week 11. And if you've got guys that are just dead weight on your roster, I'm not talking about McCutcheon or Stanton or guys like that. You're not dropping them. But a mid-round pick is not doing anything for you. I mean, Addison Russell, I gave up on the upside. I dropped Addison Russell in that shallow league. I just think it's time to start winning instead of holding on to guys when there is depth on the waiver wire.
And you dropped Addison Russell. I wanted to pick him up. I could not figure out a way to pick him up.
I didn't even notice.
He's not even playing every day now.
And that's kind of what I talked about. Matt Moore was the first player I talked about on this podcast, and I said I was able to pick him up after dropping him. And that's kind of what I'm getting at when I feel like I'm not as reluctant to drop players I still like when they're not doing well, because I feel like this happens all the time. They just sit out there, and then when they start doing well again, you'll still have another shot at them. Doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes you get burned. But then sometimes they never start performing well again. You get burned that way. So I think that kind of backs up what I'm saying.
Okay, let's go to the call-ups. The following players were called up, or will be called up. Blake Snell is going to start Thursday. Matt Andrees moving to the bullpen for the Rays. Tyler Anderson for Colorado pitched a very good one against the Padres.
Scott, are we
Sunday.
Allowed to say, yeah, but it was the Padres?
Okay, you know what I noticed
it was
about the
Colorado.
Padres? Because they're facing Chen tonight. The Padres have the 8th best OPS against lefties. Terrible against righties, but actually pretty good against lefties.
They still have like an extremely high strikeout rate against lefties, right?
Oh, very possible. I don't even know what hand Tyler Anderson uses to throw. He's a lefty. He's a lefty, and he faced a lineup that's good against lefties, and he threw 1.63 with one run. Pretty good.
And like I was saying, it was at Colorado. I'm impressed by any good start at Colorado. I would say it wasn't the most impressive start at Colorado this weekend. It may have been the third or fourth most impressive start. John Gray was good at home again, I think, for the third consecutive turn. If he can hold his own there, and I think that's one of the more underowned guys right now, probably because the season ERA is still high, but there's been a lot of dominance from John Gray recently. And then Christian Friedrich of the Padres had turned in his fourth good start in six, I think, at Colorado. So he might be verging on mixed league consideration as well, Friedrich, that is.
I think we need to investigate what the raising of the outfield fences has done to Coors Field. I don't know if it's had a significant impact or not, but definitely been better pitching performances this year than I can remember. All right, so we got Snell and Tyler Anderson up. We got Tim Anderson, White Sox shortstop, up. Max Muncy up. Peter O'Brien up. And Eric Johnson up for... he did not have a good starting.
No, he did not.
He's not a good
pitcher. What's your level of interest in Tim Anderson, Max Muncy, and Peter O'Brien?
Pretty low. Anderson's probably the highest just because he's a shortstop, but I don't like guys who just don't walk, period, in the minors. Like, just never, ever walks. I'm talking single-digit walk total. He could run. Not sure he has enough power to make up for the lack of walks, and I don't think he did anything notable this weekend, so I'm pretty low. I think I'd hold on to, like, an Elvis Andrews or an Alcides Escobar over Anderson.
That's exactly who I dropped for him, actually, Alcides Escobar. He did have a good game on Friday, and nothing since.
Yeah.
I would be excited about Peter O'Brien if he could have like a good week or something. He's so much power potential there.
So much. Now, he never walked in the minors either. So right. I just if I'm knocking Anderson, who's considered a higher end prospect than O'Brien, if I'm knocking him down a peg because of that, I need two O'Brien as well. But
right. He walked at the lower levels. He just hasn't walked in AAA.
Okay. I would say that when you have that much power, it's It could be a game. I just need to see him perform before I really buy into him. I need to see that the at-bats are going to be there for them because they have a bit of an outfield crunch with Yasmani Tomas and David Peralta.
Owings is on the DL now, so that does help Peter O'Brien. And he did homer over the weekend. He's going to strike out a ton, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he homered and he struck out a ton. I think he's 1-for-9 with 4 or 5 strikeouts in the home run.
Wow. That's Peter O'Brien for you. Okay, in the bullpen, I'm not sure what the major developments were. It looked like we were flirting with major developments, and not sure anything actually happened, but Carlos Estevez is now the Rockies' closer, as we mentioned. Glenn Perkins had a setback. Jason Grilli is Toronto's setup man, and Roberto Osuna is dealing with some soreness right now. It doesn't seem like a huge deal. Houston Street's been horrible. Santiago Garcia's been up and down, but Bruce Bochy's sticking by him. And Ross Ohlendorf got a save on Saturday with Cingrani pitching the eighth for the Reds. Maybe it was a lefty thing.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And then, actually, I feel like I oversold the bullpen thing. I don't think anything really major happened.
No, the one thing did happen that I don't think you mentioned. I don't think, but I'm bad at listening sometimes. So, Brandon Kinsler came into the eighth inning after getting the Twins' most recent save in a game, I think it was Saturday night, and came into the eighth inning and blew the lead. And then Abad came in. I think Abad technically got the blown save because he allowed a hit with runners on base or something like that, but he pitched a scoreless inning and obviously has the more impressive numbers overall. So I'm hoping that edges him ahead of Kinsler in this Twins closer battle. It's a pretty low-end battle to begin with because the Twins are so bad, but if I put in a lot of claims for Carlos Estevez, the Rockies' new closer, this weekend. I would have prioritized Abad ahead of him if I knew he was the guy in Minnesota.
I mean, really, you feel like a team this bad deserves a bad closer.
I don't think Abad would be bad, though.
You but he's got it. The word bad in his name.
So. Oh, it was a joke?
A bad clue.
Okay. Yeah. It would be funnier, like, reading it, I think.
I missed that joke, too.
I think it was just your listening skills again.
All right, hey, would you consider sitting any of the following studs? Giancarlo Stanton, Jose Abreu, or Andrew McCutchen?
Abreu's turning things around. He's raised his batting average like 40 points in the last week. Here's why I want to sit any of these guys. Chris Davis.
Yeah.
That's why. He homered in 5 consecutive games after a miserable stretch. And that's what happens to, like, you can't expect even level production over the course of an entire season from any player. And what happens if you bench one of your studs and he goes off, like that, you're missing a big chunk of what you paid for. You know, I guess you could look at it like, oh, okay, he's hot now, so I can start him again. But you've missed out on 5 home runs.
But
you know,
I mean, I feel like that's more of a Heath answer than a Scott answer, because you totally buy into hot streaks and cold streaks and their effect on the upcoming game.
Well, I buy that more in DFS, where it's just a day by day thing versus week by week, and I buy it more from fringe players than.
Giancarlo Stanton is clearly not right.
Well, but how quickly could he get right again?
He could.
It could be overnight.
The one guy on that list that, and I would have to have an excellent fourth outfielder, but I could see starting Jacoby Ellsbury with 2 games at Coors Field over Giancarlo this week.
I just don't think the upside is high enough for Ellsbury, and even in a week at Coors Field, like
especially in a points league where Stanton could get you another negative 10 this week.
Yeah, no, look, I kind of agree. I mean, I don't think I'd do it, but I think McCutchen is also in this conversation. McCutchen has been really, really bad. And yeah, like I said, I picked up Brett Gardner. I'm going to start both of them in the podcast league, but you could make a case for starting Gardner over McCutchen right now. I don't think I'd do it. I wouldn't have the guts.
You could. I'm just telling you I wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't think I would either.
That's all I can really say.
Well, if you have Zach Greinke, you probably want to start him. And he faces his former team tonight, and Greinke has been pitching pretty well lately. I wish I had him on my teams. I don't. But I can have Greinke on as many teams as I want if I play FanDuel tonight. You can create a new team every day and as many teams as you want each day. So many types of contests on FanDuel. There's tournaments. There's 50-50s. There's head-to-heads. And if you're worried about commitment, don't be worried. FanDuel has no season-long commitment. Contests start at just $1. This is your chance to play fantasy baseball and win money every single day. New users, you can sign up and use our promo code HOMERUN. One word, no spaces, HOMERUN. Enter your first league, either win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. So go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and sign up with our promo code HOMERUN. But only like 1-0. Don't, you know, just HOMERUN. I don't want to oversell the amount of O's there. All right, so there's a lot from over the weekend. I'm going to pick and choose here. Let's talk about Michael Saunders, who's 63% owned. His slash line, Michael Saunders' slash line is 311, 386, 569. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it is.
Only 23 RBI on 11 home runs and no steals. So
batting leadoff a lot, right?
What'd you say?
He's batting leadoff a lot, right?
No, not anymore. He's batting behind. He's batting cleanup, I think, Michael Saunders. So, yeah, what do you think about Saunders long term? You think 63% is too low for him?
I think it's, to me, it seems about right because I think he should be must own in five outfielder leagues and I really, really questionable in three outfielder leagues.
But what's the problem with him? Because I haven't made a move to add him in a three outfielder league either. I know he's owned in some of them already, but I look at those numbers and I'm like, why do I not feel like he's better than I feel like he
is? Well, he has fewer at-bats than most people, you know, around him. Because he's like 31st in points, 35th in roto, Michael Saunders. He's got significantly fewer at-bats. I don't remember him missing time with an injury.
He sits against the occasional left-hander. Looks like he starts against them about half the time. So that would contribute to that. I mean, obviously, we're still at a stage of the season where there are some stat lines that are questionable. I mean, he still strikes out a lot. Maybe some regression's coming with the batting average and the slugging. But I think if the Blue Jays lineup heats up around him, we could get to a point early mid-July where he's indispensable. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's certainly some regression coming for him. He's got a 397 BABIP. He's not a 300 hitter. I think the main reason that we question him being this good is he's never been anywhere close to this good. And he's got, coming into this year, over 1,800 plate appearances in major leagues.
But now he's in Toronto. He'd always played in Seattle. Got hurt last year. And the Blue Jays have a history of making something out of nothing and making hitters much, much better.
Right. I liked Saunders as a sleeper at the start of last year, and then he blew out his knee, and that was kind of the end of that. So if he was doing this last year, I would be lapping it up.
Right. All right, well, would you rather have Saunders or Adam Eaton?
Eaton.
I agree, yeah.
Okay, so.
I'm having trouble explaining why.
Yeah, it makes sense. Is Whit Merrifield replacing Jerod Dyson in left field? Should fantasy owners be dropping Jerod Dyson in categories of roto leagues?
I wouldn't. There's a decent chance there's somebody out there on the waiver wire that would be better served. I wouldn't drop him just for the purpose of I don't think he's going to play anymore because I don't think that's true. But there's a decent chance there's somebody out there that would help your club more.
Tim Anderson?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't.
Let's talk pitchers. Studs being studs, part one. These four studs were studs this weekend. That's why they're in studs being studs, part one. Matt Harvey, 17 swinging strikes on Friday. Corey Kluber, Carlos Martinez, and Chris Archer had one of his best starts against Houston.
Hey, no walks for Chris Archer.
Yeah. Booyah. What really stood out to you with Harvey, Kluber, Carlos Martinez, and Archer?
Well, I guess Harvey still has the most to gain, right? And this was the best one yet. Three in a row that have been really good. So
yeah, I think I'd already moved Harvey back ahead of Archer. So I probably would be the most excited. Although, and I don't know why this continues to happen, but I feel like, I mean, we've seen so many good performances against the Astros that haven't turned out to be indicative of anything, but the Astros just not playing up to their potential.
You're referencing Archer's start?
Yeah, it's hard to walk Astros hitters.
Archer, I think, is the of these four, Harvard, Kluby, Martinez, Archer. Archer is the one who I still have some questions about.
Yes.
Because the control has been so bad. But the strikeouts have been so good that I feel like he has the least to gain either. Like from where he was a couple weeks ago to where he is now, there's been the least he could move up compared to these other three, at least in terms of public perception, more so than my ranking.
I'm just wondering if he actually had better control against the Astros or if they just swung at all of his bad pitches.
I hear you.
Chris Archer, Martinez, Kluber, Harvey, all four are must starts right now?
I'd be a little short of that on Archer, but probably going to start him.
Okay. Yep. Studs being studs, part two. I'm going to read the first name and then I'm just going to stop because we need to talk about Tanner Roark, because I noticed Tanner Roark has had the easiest schedule in the history of Major League Baseball. 11 of Roark's 13 starts have come against teams in the bottom eight in runs scored. That's entering Sunday. I don't know what the bottom eight looks like now, but when I did this research on Sunday morning, 11 of his 13 starts for Roark, bottom eight runs scored. And that includes the Mets, the Phillies, and the Braves, who are the three lowest scoring teams in baseball entering Sunday. Yes, the Mets. They have been really bad. So Roark has, you know, he had a really good start against the Cubs, too. But I just wonder if he's a sell-high candidate. But his next five starts, if they stay on their rotation 5 days, don't insert anybody, at the Padres, at the Dodgers, they can't really hit, the Mets, the Reds, and at the Mets. So it doesn't look like it's getting that much harder for Tanner Roark. Then there's Michael Fulmer, who's been amazing, Stephen Wright, who continues to be good, and Sonny Gray and Michael Wacha had good starts.
I would guess
somebody out of that group. Tell me what you think about Roark, Fulmer, Wright, Gray, Wacha.
Like, I agree with you that Tanner Roark's performance has been greatly influenced by the teams that he's faced. But I would guess if you looked at, like, the 20 pitchers that have had the best matchup so far this year, 15 of them are probably in the NL East.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change.
Three bad lineups.
Like,
well, yeah, but they're not. There are times of the year where the matchups aren't as
division
heavy.
Usually the beginning and the end.
They are more matchup
division
heavy.
Yes.
Yeah. Division heavy. So I could get behind Roark as a sell high candidate in like a roto league or a league where the relief pitcher eligibility doesn't matter. What I see him as is like if you stuck Wei and Chen or like Mike Leake, if you gave them relief pitcher eligibility, how valuable would they be compared to where they are now? So in leagues where that isn't even a consideration, the relief pitcher eligibility, that's about how I'd value Roark. And obviously he's perceived as being more valuable than those two.
Yeah, I think he's expendable in roto leagues.
All right, but I just told you his potential upcoming schedule. He's got some really good matchups, and I don't really believe the Mets are a great lineup. I don't think they're the third worst. How about this, by the way? What a World Series we had last year. The Braves are the lowest scoring team in baseball. The Phillies are number two. The Mets and the Royals are 3-4.
Yeah.
How about that? Right in between the Phillies and the Twins. Good for you guys. Michael Fulmer is on, you know, he's basically doing what nobody's done in over 100 years in terms of the amount of innings and the amount of hits. His last five starts, Fulmer has given up 13 hits and one earned run in 34 and a third innings with 30 strikeouts. How legit is Michael Fulmer?
Well, not that legit. I mean, 13 hits and 34 and a third innings, that's unsustainable. But I do think he's established himself beyond any other rookie pitcher has this year, except for maybe Steven Matz. He's technically a rookie. But Fulmer is right up there in terms of how much I trust him to perform well, whatever well means.
Yeah. I still think if you could get somebody to give you 7-1 with a 2.52 ERA value for Fulmer, I would consider selling high. But I picked him up in a lot of leagues, and I think he's must own, pretty much must start at this time. He's not going to be this good the rest of the year.
Well, would you rather have Blake Snell or Michael Fulmer?
Fulmer.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Tanner Roark or Michael Fulmer?
Fulmer.
Yeah, I think so. Unless it's a Sparp situation, yeah.
All right, studs being duds. Who are you concerned about here? Francisco Liriano. You know, it wasn't the worst start. He gave up 4 runs, only 1 earned in 6 innings with 8 strikeouts, but 3 more walks. Hisashi Iwakuma. J-Hap, 3 home runs allowed against Baltimore. Scott Kazmir, just so inconsistent. Steven Matz has had 3 straight non-quality starts. Dallas Keuchel. Dallas Keuchel was looking like Cy Young for him. Then the 5th inning came around. He gave up 5 runs, 4 earned at Tampa Bay on Sunday. Ian Kennedy's been bad in 6 starts. He's a 6.27 ERA. And you can see the home road splits for him. 146 ERA at home for Kennedy, 544 on the road. And Lance McCullers really hasn't been very good, just walking a lot of batters. And he's another guy who's been in his career last year and this year much better at home. So I gave you a lot of names. I won't even repeat them. Just tell me, you know, who you're worried about. Like, are you at the point where you're dropping anybody on this list? I know it's not going to be Keuchel or Matz, but anybody else?
Yeah. Yeah. I did drop J-Hap over the weekend, and this I felt was a long time coming. It amazed me that he kept it up as long as he did, because he's just not missing bats like he did in Pittsburgh last year. Felt like that was going to catch up to him. Seems to be finally. Liriano got dropped in a shallower points league, and I wanted to pick him up just because I know how high I have him ranked, but it was another situation where I want to pick him up, but I don't really want to make the roster space for him. So I'm kind of just content to let him sit out there. Since his first start, really, he's just been bad. This most recent one was probably his second best, actually. And it wasn't that great. So
I could see dropping Kazmir if there was a good option on the waiver wire.
Sure. Yeah. Kazmir.
The Kennedy thing. The thing that frustrates me about borderline pitchers is when I can't predict when I should start them. And it seems pretty clear to me that you know when to start Ian Kennedy and when not to. It is largely a home road thing, but also he's given up 7 home runs at Chicago and at Yankee Stadium. He gave up 2 in Cleveland when the wind was blowing out. Other than that, he's had 1 bad road start. You don't start him at somewhere like Chicago, at somewhere like Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, this is, you know, that's fair. I think guys like Kennedy, I was worried about this at Rich Hill in the beginning. Obviously he's hurt now, but it never really came to pass. I think you could lump Matt Wisler in there, because Wisler just in 2 starts went from a low 3 ERA to a mid 4 ERA because of a bunch of home runs.
Right.
These extreme fly ball pitchers, like Kennedy, they'll have these games where their fly balls just don't stay in the park.
But it's fairly predictable where that's going to happen.
Like you said, wind was blowing out in Cleveland. You can't predict that days in advance.
No, but for the most part, he's not going to have these type of starts at home, at Minnesota, probably not at Detroit.
For the most part, but
in Oakland,
they'll still pop up occasionally and frustrate you, just because sometimes those fly balls will be longer.
Yeah. Also, I didn't realize how bad of a whip pitcher Ian Kennedy was. He's got a 1.25 whip this year, which is his lowest since 2011.
Yeah, I can't stand Kennedy. What's his walk rate this year? You can't stand Kennedy? Sorry, I keep talking over you.
Nah, whatever. Let's move on. Fringe starting pitchers, part 1. These guys are owned in 65 to 79% of leagues. Who do you want? Colby Lewis, 5-0 with a 3 ERA. Tyler Chatwood, 75% owned. 0.65 ERA on the road. Julio Urias, 2 good ones in a row. Adam Conley, I don't really understand your fascination with Adam Conley. Matt Shoemaker, yes, we like him. Kevin Gausman, Michael Pineda, 2 good ones in a row. Yordano Ventura and Mike Leake. Who are your favorite 3 in that group?
3 pretty good ones in a row for Pineda. But okay, to answer your question, Shoemaker's the clear number 1. Mm-hmm. Probably Arias 2, and I'm still gonna give the edge to Conley over Pineda and Ventura. They're both there.
Heath? Yeah, I would agree on Shoemaker. Those other guys are all so close. I'd probably go though Urias and Pineda.
Here's okay. One thing I want to mention on Conley, since I kind of trashed him earlier, he noted that a lot of the hits he gave up were ground balls that weren't hit very hard.
Yeah.
And I checked, and yeah, this start was the most ground balls he'd given up in any start. 11 hits, only 3 of them were for extra bases. He said still his stuff wasn't good, or else they would just be swings and misses instead of ground balls. So, but I was a little encouraged by that. I still don't think he's must own or anything. I can't help but be fascinated with him and the strikeouts and just how good he looks.
But even the strikeouts, like for the year, it's 8.6 per nine. It's pretty
okay.
It's above average, barely.
He had eight. He had an 8 strikeout game, 9 strikeout game before this. I mean, I don't know. He's kind of. I don't trust him, but I'm still intrigued.
8.6 per nine. Who on waivers are you going to get that's 8.6 per nine? It's few and far between.
No, that's true.
You know, that's pretty good.
You go get Michael Pineda.
Could go get Michael Pineda.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. I guess don't give up on him yet. All right. I need to mention a pitcher here who's 60% owned, and in his last 6 starts, this particular pitcher has a .71 ERA. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I bet he pitches for the Yankees.
He does pitch for the Yankees. And he's CeCe Sabathia, 60% owned. How does Sabathia measure up with some of these hot ticket items, James Paxton and Danny Duffy, who's 62% owned? And
I'm going to be much more excited by the younger pitchers on this list. Chris Tower said it really well, I thought, a couple of weeks ago. He was talking about Sabathia. And I guess it's the cutter, right, that's working so well for Sabathia this year.
Yep.
And he said it just feels kind of like a gimmick. I can believe that it's going to work in the short term, but it's hard to imagine that this change at this stage of his career is going to work for an entire season.
Well, it's been 2 more weeks since Chris Towers said that, so it's worked a little longer.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with the overall point. I think even though Sabathia's numbers look much better, I'm probably as likely to pick him up as I am Michael Pineda or Yordano Ventura, neither of whom I'm particularly high on, but I just feel like the upside's higher. And obviously their best starts have been better.
I'd much rather have John Gray. I'd rather have Duffy than Sabathia. I'd rather have Paxton.
What is Gray's ownership percentage 58%. Compared to all those pitchers?
58. I don't really understand why people are higher on Tyler Chatwood than John Gray.
No, I don't either.
Chatwood's been much better.
Depends what you consider good.
Right.
He's obviously not a bat misser, and right. I'm not going to trust that, particularly a guy who pitches half his games at Coors Field. But Gray, I think people are just looking at that 4.70 ERA and saying, no thanks. It's been a lot better lately.
Like Chetwood's like third amongst pitchers in WAR, right?
Okay, how's that WAR fantasy league treating you?
Well, most of the things that he's getting credit for actually do count in fantasy leagues. The 2.89 ERA. I think the thing that people love about Chetwood is kind of the same thing I was saying about Ian Kennedy. Is you know when to start Tyler Chetwood. He goes on the road, and he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball.
I'm just concerned that's not going to last. And I think John Gray is getting to the point where you start him anywhere. Like I said, his last 3 home starts have been good. Now, he had last 8 starts, he had a 9 earned run outing in there, which obviously inflates things. But a 3.55 ERA in his last 8 starts with well more than a strikeout per inning and a sub-1 whip.
I mean, I like Gray more than Chetwood. I was just explaining why people like Chetwood more than Gray.
Okay. All right. Let me speed it up here so we can get to some emails and a little DFS. One guy I forgot to mention who made his major league debut was Daniel Mengden of Oakland, and he gave up 2 runs in 5 2/3 with 4 walks and 5 strikeouts at Cincinnati. Do you have any interest in Daniel Mengden? He is 7% owned. Heath.
AL only, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Travis Shaw may start sitting against lefties for Josh Rutledge. Shaw's been struggling. Austin Jackson expected to miss about 6 weeks with a knee injury, and that is not really good news for the White Sox pitchers because it puts Aubie Garcia back in the field. Angelton Simmons could return in the next few days. Willie Peralta could be removed from the Brewers rotation, and Matt Cain will start today against who the heck are they playing? The Brewers, I believe, for San Francisco. So that brings us to DFS. Have you looked at the slate, Heath?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I've got Greinke. I'm not going Scherzer against the Cubs. I think I'm going Greinke against former team, the Dodgers. Okay. Kind of an interesting slate. There are not a lot of good pitchers tonight.
No, it's well, I mean, there's one exceptional pitcher, Scherzer, and I'll have some Scherzer. That Cubs offense is scary, but they're on the road, so that makes them a little bit less scary. And there's plenty of strikeout potential, so Scherzer could still have a really nice game. Greinke, though, is probably a slightly better option. What's kind of missing are the cheap pitchers that we look for so that we can play expensive bats. I don't see one besides maybe Sean Manaea that I'm very excited about.
Yeah, I think people are going to look at Wei-Yin Chen at San Diego, and that's interesting. But like I mentioned, the Padres pretty good against lefties, eighth best OPS. And Matt Kemp, by the way, has an OPS over 1,000 against lefties.
I did look it up, and they also have the third highest strikeout rate in baseball against lefties, but that's probably not going to help Chen very much.
Okay, I have Lucroy in my lineup. He's got good numbers against Kane. I got Miguel Cabrera, who's only 3,500, has great numbers against Shields. Gene Segura, Danny Valencia facing a lefty. Tim Anderson is my $2,200 fill-in at shortstop. I have Stanton at 3,000, Ryan Braun at 3,700, and David Peralta at 2,600 facing Mike Bolsinger, a right-handed pitcher. Let's read some emails. Oh, just one more thing. What would I not like? Left-handed Rangers against Sean Manaea. Don't start any lefties. They hit 382. Lefties have a 382 OPS. Sorry. 382 OPS against Manaea. Only 33 at bats, but yeah. I want to avoid it.
Okay.
This is from Steven, the stupid owner who traded, Bogarts, Myers, and Ozuna for Dozier, Votto, and Profar. He wants to know, when did Xander Bogarts become this good? After what I thought was trading high on Bogarts, Myers, and Ozuna, they have not slowed down. Put my mind at ease and tell me that at least Bogarts' peripherals show he can't keep this up.
They do. Nobody can keep up what he's been doing lately, but he has done an exceptional job of maintaining a high average while increasing his power, just like he said he was going to do. I didn't really think it was possible. Looking at the peripherals, I still don't see how it's possible. Mm-hmm. But he's still doing it. I think you can feel comfortable in that Xander Bogarts is going to cool off.
But how much? I think Al likes him better than every shortstop but Machado and Correa. And I think maybe he's hedging on Correa, as we all are.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, Bogarts is interesting because I feel like there wasn't a lot of signs that he could be this good. You just knew he was supposed to be this good. And so maybe he's a good example of that happening, where sometimes the argument's really that simple. This player's supposed to be good, so you can trust he will be good.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, he was such a high-end prospect, and he was never bad as a major leaguer. You just kept thinking, okay, where's the indicator? Like Heath was saying, like, is there really an indication he can hit for more power?
Yeah.
And he just, well, he's supposed to, and now he has. So,
all right, Tim from Richmond, Virginia says, dear Calvin, Theodore, and George.
Presidents?
Yeah, they're presidents, but more specifically, they are three of the racing presidents of the Nationals president's race.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Which two would you start this week in a points league? Archie Bradley against the Dodgers, Anthony DeSclafani at Atlanta, Sonny Gray against Texas, Samardzija at Tampa Bay, Jason Hamill at Washington, or a two-start at home Edinson Volquez?
Calvin Coolidge is one of the racing presidents?
I guess so.
I don't even know what he looks like.
You might be able to find out what he looks like if he had a gigantic head.
Maybe. But if you showed me a portrait of Calvin Coolidge, I could not tell you that's Calvin Coolidge.
This is a tough question. I'm going to rule out Archie Bradley. I'm not starting him out of this group. And I think I'm going to rule out Jason Hamill. I'm probably going with Gray and Volquez.
I'm going Gray and Hamill. You know what? I actually might go Gray and Samardzija because I like Samardzija, that matchup at Tampa Bay. So I know Samardzija's last three starts haven't been great, but the matchup, I think, trumps that.
Yeah, at Tampa Bay.
Case.
All right, next email is from Chris from Bangor. Ryan, Tommy, and Darren, he says. Dear Ryan, Tommy, and Darren.
Those are Phillies, right?
Yeah.
Phillies
catchers? Good job.
Now that Tommy Joseph is officially the starter in Philly, what kind of... we kind of answered this already.
Yep.
Yeah, you could pick him up in one catcher leagues for sure, Chris. This is from Jeff in Texas. Dear Walker, Trevette, and CD. What?
Never heard of a Trevette. It sounds like an old Chevrolet.
This appears to be Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, okay.
With Shinsu Chu off the DL, I now have... Oh, I guess it's definitely Walker, Texas Ranger. I now have Chu, Profar, Desmond, Mazzara, and Beltre on my 12-team 6x6 league. am I handcuffing myself with too many players from one team?
No, I don't think that's a big concern in baseball, at least not in a weekly format, because
no, it's daily.
Oh, it is daily?
And I think that's kind of the point of his question, is like he can't, if they have an off day. You know.
Yes, I missed that detail. Sorry.
Might be.
I'm not too worried about it still. Like, I wouldn't be dropping one of those guys. They all should be owned. You could maybe try to trade one, but don't just give them up.
Right. Right. But would you like, would you trade Beltre for Kyle Seager? I mean, I might do that anyway, because I rank Kyle Seager higher, but.
Right.
Well, yeah, with the hamstring injury,
exploring.
I would.
It's worth, yeah. It's, well, he's supposed to be back.
I mean,
right?
It's just, it's daily moves, but your score is still weekly. So you have one off day for all your players on Monday. Almost everybody else has one off day that week too. It's not, I don't think it's really hurting you that bad. Like on a week where they play five games, you're going to lose. On a week where they play seven games, you're going to be in great shape.
All right. Last question from Joe from Parts Unknown. He says, what's happening, Rod, Todd, and Ned?
That would be the Flanders family, right?
It would be the Flanders. I've got a question about two pitchers that are podcast darlings in relation to Blake Snell. Would you drop Anthony DeSclafani, who Al has swiped right on numerous times, or James Paxton, who seems to have cooked breakfast for Adam a time or two, for Blake Snell?
I'm not sure I get those references.
I do, but
they're funny.
I would probably drop DeSclafani for Snell.
Yeah, I would absolutely. I don't understand the DeSclafani hype. I'm going to be perfectly honest. Al's not the only one who likes him in the fantasy community, but I just don't get it. I see a homer prone, not particularly high strikeout guy, and for a bad team. So yeah, give me Snell.
Homer prone. You must be talking about Royals broadcasters. Oh, we'll end it on that. Take that, burn Heath. Take that.
Okay, I get it.
Enjoy your rebuild.
Enjoy your rebuild. Yes, I will. I will. It won't last as long as the Royals rebuild. I can promise you that. For Heath Cummings and Scott White, I'm Adam Baser, talking a little baseball trash. I like it on Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Machado.